This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The sunscreen pollution is a symptom of unmanaged or unsustainable tourism. And that's one of the big take-home lessons out of this whole topic is tourism is what starts it, and tourism can fix it.
Visitors to the Hawaiian island of Oahu marvel at the splendor of Hanauma Bay, a volcanic crater teeming with coral reefs, tropical fish, and the occasional sea turtle. But there's something else that the snorkelers may notice as they enjoy the bright colors of a local rainbow-hued parrotfish. Upon the surface of the water floats a colorful, oily film, deposited there from the bodies of the 3,000 visitors who descend upon the state park every day. That works out to approximately 1 million swimmers per year. If each of those people applies a half ounce to an ounce of sunscreen before mingling with the marine life there, that's literally hundreds of gallons of sunscreen a day being poured into the small bay. One imagines that all those chemicals must have an impact on the health of that fragile ecosystem. Well, our guest today on Sea Change Radio, Craig Downs, is the executive director of Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. His organization's research established just how detrimental common sunscreen ingredients are to coral reefs, and the findings helped lead to a recent ban on these ingredients across the entire state of Hawaii. We talk today about what the offending chemicals do, the particulars of the new legislation, and whether we can expect other jurisdictions to follow suit. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Craig Downs. Craig is the executive director of the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. Craig, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me, Alex. I appreciate it.
So for our listeners, what is the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory? It's a great name. Maybe give us also a little bit of the background of that.
All right. We are a 501c3 nonprofit science and education organization. We do pretty much pro bono forensic investigations around the world for people and environments that can't defend themselves. So we'll look at coral reefs to wetlands that are dying. Nobody knows what they're dying from, and we'll figure out what they're dying from. And then we will work with grassroots organizations all the way up to international NGOs and governments to change the condition of that environment or population.
And where does the name Hereticus come from?
Hereticus comes from the Greek word heresy or heretic, and it originally means to once you know something, you can choose to do something. So an oil executive that we were working with told me that if we were to begin to do pro bono cases, that we would be a heretic to the industry. And I like that concept so much that that's what we named our organization.
So you've been working on research and trying to raise awareness of the role that sunscreen is playing, certain sunscreens are playing in killing off coral reefs. Why don't you first explain what types of sunscreens we're looking at and maybe give us kind of the beginnings of the research, if you will.
So we were tasked back in 2005, 2006 by the U.S. National Park Service to begin figuring out why certain coral reefs were dying and not recovering in one of their national parks, the Virgin Islands National Park in St. John, U.S. Virgin Islands. And one of the most famous beaches, Trunk Bay, we discovered that it was sunscreen pollution as the dominant stressor that was killing the reef and suppressing the restoration of that reef. And when we sampled the water, one of the most prominent chemicals out of our assessment was the chemical oxybenzone. And at the time, oxybenzone was in almost every sunscreen out there. It was the dominant UV protector in Banana Boat, Coppertone, and everybody was using it. So we found that oxybenzone and sunscreen pollution all over the world, in places such as Palau, Hawaii, Mexico, Belize, Spain, Israel, Persian Gulf. So it's all over the place. And it's not on every single coral reef in the world, but it's on coral reefs where people go. It's on coral reefs that's important for tourism. And the sunscreen pollution is a symptom of unmanaged or unsustainable tourism. And that's one of the big take-home lessons out of this whole topic is tourism is what starts it, and tourism can fix it, meaning that sustainable tourism can be implemented and people can enjoy these coral reefs. They can participate in these reefs and in these natural resources if they do certain precautionary measures.
Such as?
So there are at least three things that we can think of as a precautionary measure. You need to protect yourself from the sun. So public health is critical. You need to protect yourself from UV radiation. But oxybenzone sunscreen, which is one of the most dangerous of the chemicals in sunscreen pollution, doesn't have to be a part of that solution. It doesn't have to be a part of that problem. So the first thing we recommend is to cover up. If you're going to be out on the reef and you're going to be swimming, wear a sun shirt. It doesn't have to be a tight rash guard. There are a whole bunch of companies out there, Mott 50, Lands' End, J. Crew, that sell looser fitting shirts than surfer rash guards that you can wear in the water and then, you know, go up to the beach with it and go up to the cafe or the cabana and wear it on you and not have to lose the protection against the UV radiation, as well as being able to reduce your sunscreen pollution load by 50%. If you're wearing a sun shirt that has sleeves, that means you're not putting sunscreen lotion on your body in that area. That 50% reduction or more is a big conservation deal. It's a major conservation tool. The second thing you can do is to wear sunscreens that don't contain some of these more toxic chemicals, such as oxybenzone, actinosate, or contain preservatives like butylparaben or propylparaben or methylparaben. The parabens are actually endocrine disruptors. And many invertebrates use methylparaben as a pheromone. So the presence of these parabens are pretty bad. They're endocrine disruptors. And they can cause a loss of populations from prohibiting the development of a number of invertebrates in that area. Invertebrates like shrimp, like sea urchins, Christmas tree worms, there are about 1,000 more organisms on any given coral reef, especially invertebrate organisms, than just coral. Sea urchins are a big deal. Sea stars are a big deal. Feather worms, sea cucumbers, crabs, shrimp.
The whole ecosystem there.
The whole ecosystem, especially the invertebrates, are susceptible to these chemicals. So wearing sunscreen lotions that don't contain these chemicals, again, is a big conservation tool in mitigating that pollution.
When I first heard about Hawaii banning sunscreens, and I want to dive into that in a second, my first reaction was, well, how can just a small amount of lotion that we may slather onto our bodies affect a coral reef, which is can be many, many thousands of square feet and has the ocean tides coming in and out. And when you think of the volume of water versus the amount of even the most pernicious sunscreen, it seems like a small amount. But you and your team have come across some interesting data that shows that even these relatively small amounts matter quite a bit, don't they?
Yes. And so it's a really good question. And there's a number of perspectives associated with that question. First of all, you don't put on a little bit of sunscreen to protect yourself. That's actually a clinical problem called sunscreen abuse. An average person wearing a bikini or normal size swim trunks, they need to put on about 36 grams of sunscreen every hour and a half and then reapply. And so if you're putting 36 grams of sunscreen in your normal size person and you're getting in the water for 4 hours, you know, you're looking at about 72 grams of sunscreen. That's just you. Now multiply that by 500 to 1,000 people getting into the water in that day, every single day. It adds up. And oxybenzone is a persistent organopollutant. It will hang around from 90 days to 2.5 years. It doesn't break down.
And the tides don't wash it away, huh?
Well, not really. I mean, you got something called retention. And especially if you're in a bay or lagoon, that water is kept in that place. That's where the coral reefs are, and that's where people want to swim.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a offshore coral reef, seeing lots of heavy current and a lot of waves, you're not going to get a lot of people swimming there. And the coral reefs that see a lot of people are these fringing reefs. Fringing reefs are reefs that surround the coastline, that are on the coastline, and they can get up right to the beach.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Craig Downs. He's the executive director of the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. When you talk about the coral reefs disappearing off the west coast of Maui, what percentage would you just guess could be attributed to these sunscreens?
The reefs along Maui, about 60% of them in the last 30 years have disappeared. Now, that's not all caused by sunscreen. The death itself can be caused by a number of factors. An El Nino bleaching event, pesticide runoff is also another good one. Sedimentation runoff from development is another big factor. Coral reefs are an organic system, meaning they're a biological system. There's living, there's dying, and then there's rebirth and recruitment. And many large factors can cause coral reefs to see a punctuated death event. Again, like I said, an El Nino bleaching event, a sedimentation event, a hurricane. In the old days, meaning 60 to 70 years ago, we would see these natural environmental punctuated death events, and they would cause mass destruction of these coral reefs. 5 years later, after that hurricane event, you couldn't tell a reef was damaged because it would grow back so quickly. And so where oxybenzone and sunscreen pollution comes in is that it's a toxicant, and it's a toxicant that really affects juvenile developmental states. So the larval or baby forms of shrimp, of coral, of fish are way more susceptible to toxicity than the adults. And an area that sees sunscreen pollution is not going to get recruitment or restoration after a damaged death event. And so what you get with sunscreen pollution is this persistent desolation and death of that coral reef until it just turns to rubble and sand.
So, Craig, why don't you explain this ban that Hawaii has instituted on sunscreens, what it means for the work that you do moving forward?
So the Hawaii ban came around because Hawaii's coral reefs are dying and they're not coming back. And the politicians were desperate for methods that could be measured if they were employed. For example, banning of certain chemicals of sunscreen pollution and seeing if there would be restoration to occur. And that's pretty much why the legislation went forward and I think passed, is Hawaii needs its coral reefs. I think they're valued. One number was, it was like $39 billion for the state of Hawaii. And without those coral reefs, you're going to lose tourism and you're going to lose subsistence fishing and algae take. I mean, we discovered that oxybenzone, actually it was a Singapore group discovered oxybenzone is an awesome herbicide, if you can be morbid about it. And so that it kills algae at very, very low concentrations, at 10 parts per trillion, it's toxic to algae. And lots of things eat that algae, sea turtles, humans, you know, the algae that you wrap around your sushi for on your maki roll. We're losing all of that habitat in areas where people could swim, not just tourists, but also native Hawaiian groups and locals who are subsistence fishers and takers from the sea. So the legislation allows for a chance for restoration to occur, for coral reefs to come back by getting rid of the two most noxious and toxic chemicals found in sunscreen pollution. And I think it's a great first step, and it's a first step that is being followed, as far as I know, by about 29 other countries and jurisdictions around the world.
Can you outline the ban a little bit in greater depth for listeners who aren't familiar with it?
Right. So the ban is that it bans sunscreen products, you know, beach products that contain oxybenzone and actinosate. And this ban would go in effect in 2021. And the ban is only a ban on sale. So the worst thing to do is to agitate a tourist coming to Hawaii and they're on the beach and they're spraying themselves, they're putting lotion on themselves of sunscreen. It contains oxybenzone and they get a ticket. That's just not a good way of managing the issue. And so the politicians in Hawaii, the Hawaii legislature, decided that the best way of going about mitigating this pollution is prohibiting the sale in that state from distributors like the ABC stores or Long's Drugs or Walmart from selling these toxic sunscreens. And so most products would contain oxybenzone, sprays, lotions, sticks. But since 2015, since 2014, a number of companies have reformulated their products so they don't contain oxybenzone or actinosate. And now most products that you find in Hawaii really don't contain them. Most of them are zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, or they'll be chemical sunscreens like octocrylene and avobenzone.
And how do the zinc and titanium-based sunscreens work in fighting the UVA and the UVB rays?
That's a good question. They're actually superior. Zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are really good broad-spectrum protectors against UVA and UVB. You know, in the past, like 10 years ago, when you would apply an oxide or mineral sunscreen to your skin, you would look pasty white and it would stay pasty white. And that really wasn't all that attractive. But sunscreen companies have discovered that the smaller the zinc oxide or titanium dioxide particle is, the faster it will blend into your skin and look better.
Pretty Maui mama lying over the water with the moon in your eyes. From my hotel window in the clouds, I love you right out loud. Oh, Hawaiian sunrise. And in the morning when you rise, I know you do.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Craig Downs. He's the executive director of the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. So this is a two-part question. Why do sunscreen manufacturers still produce sunscreen that contains oxybenzone, and maybe tell us what's being done on a federal level, because people, as you mentioned, can still just bring their own sunscreen to Hawaii. So the ban is really only useful for people who are buying sunscreen in Hawaii.
The reason why sunscreen companies, many sunscreen companies, still want to use oxybenzone is for a number of reasons. First of all, it is dirt cheap to purchase and use in a product. If you go to Walmart and you look at some of these sunscreens that are big name products, they're selling a bottle of sunscreen, a 6 ounce bottle of sunscreen, for $2.18. So oxybenzone is really, really cheap, even though it has a huge carbon cost. The second thing is that it's a stable chemical, which is also why it's a dangerous chemical for the environment. It doesn't break down very easy. And sunscreen companies like that because it helps protect people from UVA radiation. You can put it on and it'll stay on for 45 minutes to 80 minutes. Second of all, some people really like the sprays and they like to be sprayed on and not have to deal with it. And oxybenzone is one of the better chemicals to be used in a spray, except now you're inhaling that oxybenzone. So what's being done on the federal level? Well, at the federal level, the science has really moved far and fast in the last 10 months to a year on the toxicity to humans. The Chinese academic field, the Chinese scientists have discovered that exposure by a pregnant woman to oxybenzone early in her first trimester increases the risk of that baby having a deformity called Hirschsprung's disease immensely. And there are a whole bunch of other birth defects associated with oxybenzone exposure, from low birth rate to hormonal issues in the child, for example, a delayed onset of breasts for young girls, and smaller testicles for young boys whose parents were exposed to oxybenzone. So there's all these human toxicities that are now coming to light. And at the federal level, a number of politicians are either wanting the Food and Drug Administration to do a full-on toxicology review to see if these chemicals are safe. And if there's just some indication that they're not safe, they're wanting to move, these politicians are wanting to move forward with banning the use of this chemical in sunscreen products and other cosmetic products.
So you have Tulsi Gabbard, who is a congresswoman out of Hawaii. Is she going to be putting forth a bill? And what are the chances of something like this passing? Is this going to take congressional action, or is this something that the EPA could, or FDA could, mandate in terms of creating a oxybenzone prohibition?
It's my belief that if you're going to protect the American people, it's going to take congressional action. The federal agencies, as good as some of, and well-meaning as many of those administrative agency scientists are, the power of the product protection industry is overwhelming and intimidating. And that's one of the reasons why oxybenzone is still allowed to be used today, because it was grandfathered in. It was pushed by industry to allow it to be used, even though if it was required to be retested, it would never pass the retesting. It would never pass the safety criteria for to be used as an over-the-counter drug for sunscreens. And you know, with other issues, for example, chlorpyrifos, lead, you know, it could be decades before the FDA or the EPA get around to coming up with a regulatory suggestion or decision, recommendation to prevent these chemicals from being used. I think you got to go straight to Congress and have Congress just ban or pull that chemical from being used. And the example that I want to give would be the plastic microbeads. Plastic microbeads are extremely dangerous to aquatic and marine life. And I think it was 6 to 8 states passed a ban on plastic microbeads being used in personal care products like toothpaste and lotions. And they're actually used in sunscreen, and they're still used in sunscreens. Congress passed a bill banning microbeads being used. It was signed by President Obama. And I think that was one of the greatest recent successes for environmental conservation and pollution that the United States has put forward. And so many other countries are now following suit in Europe and in Asia, because they're now recognizing that it is a problem and it is an issue, and the environment and public health do need protection. And I think that's where Congress, they need to step up. So even if oxybenzone is responsible for 60% of the Hirschsprung disease cases in newborns, you know, the rate of Hirschsprung's disease is 1 to 3,000 births to 1 to 5,000 births, depending on where you are in the country. That is a lot of babies being born unnecessarily with this deformity. And you can either do a public health policy of getting women to understand that they don't want to use any type of products with oxybenzone in them, which who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that public health campaign? It's just easier to ban it outright and not have it present and women exposed to that type of toxicant.
Craig, maybe you can tell our listeners some ways that they might be able to take action to help the cause of banning these harmful sunscreen ingredients.
One of the easiest ways they can get involved is they can go to change.org, and we have a citizen's petition to the Food and Drug Administration asking the FDA to re-review the safety of oxybenzone and actinosate. And if we can get 1,500 signatures from U.S. citizens, what we're hoping to do is to provide that petition to a congresswoman or a senator, and to personally then give that petition over to Commissioner Gottlieb of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to let the FDA know that we're serious, that the American people don't want to be poisoned anymore unnecessarily. And it's not just the, you know, people are being exposed not just from cosmetic products. It's in our food. All that sunscreen, all that oxybenzone is getting in the fish that we eat. It's getting into the plants that we eat. It's getting into the water we drink. So it's now a universal environmental contaminant, and we really need to do something about it.
Craig Downs is the executive director of the Hereticus Environmental Laboratory. Craig, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Sunshine Steel Band, the Blind Boys of Alabama, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.